Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I'm your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. Before we get to our great guest, I would like to ask for some help with the almighty algorithms. Please like, share, and comment on our shows. This gives us a lot of better standing in the various platforms that we post on. And so if you could, please like, share, and comment. So our great guest today is Joe Reek. He's a husband, father of two sons and one daughter, and the vice president of sales at Emergency Essentials, a long-term food storage company. His 13 years of experience with emergency food storage and preparedness industry helps him guide the company and their business model. So, Joe, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Hey, thank you so much, Preston, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure. You know, I've been getting you guys' emails for quite some time, and I enjoy reading the blog posts that you guys put out, which are really great, and some of the neat sales that you guys put on, especially right now. It looks like you got a really good sale on, too.
We do.
But just a little plug for that. But, you know, you guys have a lot of resources, and, you know, I really like your take on community preparedness, and that's one of the things that brought me to getting a hold of you and getting you on the show. But we're not going to talk about that necessarily today. What I want to do is I want to dig into the prepared foods that we have, that many of us have in our long-term storage pantry, you know, long-term food products. What are some of their benefits and drawbacks?
Perfect. Well, Preston, again, it's an honor to be here with you guys. I sure do appreciate the opportunity to kind of share with you a little bit more about what we do as a company. You mentioned our vast amount of resources that we have for emergency preparedness and extending that onto, you know, our families as well as to our communities. And, you know, I think that that's attributed to our 30 years in the emergency preparedness industry. You know, we started here in Salt Lake City over 30 years ago, providing different long-term emergency storage solutions, whether that be, you know, emergency food, you know, survival gear, 72-hour emergency grab-and-go kits, and, you know, food kits and things like that. And so one of the specialties that we focus on is long-term emergency food storage. You know, throughout the years, we've really developed different processes, and, you know, we have a very good understanding of the technology of having a means to be able to have this product available. And so, you know, our product, again, it is long-term emergency food storage. It comes up to a 25-year shelf life. And now the idea or the benefit with this product is this is something that you get before any type of an emergency or any type of a disaster. You know, you're planning ahead, you're being proactive, so that way, if something were to happen, whether that be a natural disaster, whether that be kind of like a global pandemic with what we're going through right now,
right,
or even if it's something as a job loss, or if, you know, if the breadwinner ends up becoming sick and isn't able to work, you know, does that not qualify as a disaster for that particular family? And so our product is designed to help families, help individuals in the times of need when they just don't have any other resources or the ability to even go out to the grocery store and get food to keep them going.
Yes. And long-term food storage should be a portion of the pantry that you have for preparedness, whether it's preparing for a hurricane, a job loss, or whatever. You need various levels of preparedness, which these freeze-dried foods are a great option for long-term food storage because they do have that 25-year shelf life. Now,
absolutely.
I've always wondered, why is it cut off at 25 years and not 30 or 35?
Well, I mean, typically the way that they measure that is it's not really based on the flavor or the taste of the product. While that is important, a lot of the reasons why they cut it off on the 25 to 30 year shelf life is because what happens is they found through studies and through testing is after the 25 year mark, the nutritional value of the product begins to deteriorate a lot faster than if it were to be utilized before that time frame. So it kind of begins to decrease exponentially after that 25-year mark. Now, a lot of it also depends on the way that you store the product. I mean, storage of this product is also going to be a very, very critical piece of to how long that product can last. But if you were to store it, you know, in optimal conditions, you can store it, you know, to get that nutritional value of the product, you know, up to that 25 years. Now, that's not to say, Preston, that after that 25-year period, that food is going to be consumable. Yeah, you can definitely consume it. You can eat it. It's not going to give you the exact nutritional elements that were to be in it prior to that, but you could still eat it and still satisfy that desire of or that need to eat something and fill up your belly. It's just that you're going to be a lot hungrier, a lot faster because there's really no nutritive value in that product.
Okay, so proper food storage is what?
You know, typically what I tell my customers is indoors, always indoors, doors, you know, the cooler, the better. Some locations do not have basements, you know, here in Salt Lake City, Utah, basements are very, very common. And so a lot of families will have basements in their homes or cold storages, you know, cut out at the bottom of their homes or like a cellar type spot that maintains a temperature degree throughout the year, around 55 to 60 degrees year round. Right. Those are considered optimal temperatures. Now, I know that we have several customers throughout the country who do not have basements, but I always suggest of storing it indoors, ambient room temperature, you know, you can get up to that 25-year shelf life. I would never, ever recommend storing this product in a hot garage or a hot attic or a storage shed. Definitely not, because anytime the product is exposed to heat over a longer period of time, the shelf life is going to decrease as well as the nutritive value will decrease exponentially.
Okay.
So, I mean, for example, you know, customers of ours that live in Phoenix or Arizona or, you know, southern Utah that have temperatures, you know, in the 100 degrees during the summertime.
Yeah.
If they were to store that product in their hot attic or their hot garage where temperatures exceed, you know, 100 degrees or 150 degrees, you know, for, you know, several years, yeah, you're going to see a decrease in the nutritional value as well as the shelf life of that product.
I got a little story on MREs. I had a case of MREs in the garage, in my garage in San Antonio. And when I moved to Virginia, I, you know, organized my stuff and I thought, I need to check these out. So I opened it up. Oh, boy, nothing, not even the chewing gum was edible. I mean, it was bad. It was bad.
Yeah, I mean, the MREs, that's kind of a different animal, which, you know, the MREs, what it stands for is meals ready to eat. And the biggest way that you can distinguish between long-term and short-term is going to be the simple fact of whether you have to add water. If you have to add water into a product, whether it's dehydrated or freeze-dried, just knowing that off the top of your head, that's going to be considered long-term food storage. For example, like an MRE, which the MRE stands for meals ready to eat, those are what we consider short-term food storage because there's no preparation needed. You know, with that MRE, you can open it up and be able to consume it without really even adding anything to it. And so that's, you know, the short-term stuff like that, like the MREs, while they're super, super valuable and they have their place, they do have a lot shorter shelf life. Typically 5 years is what we recommend for those MREs.
Yeah, that's if they're stored properly, not like the ones I did, you know.
Again, that's the key word there, Preston, is to store it properly.
Yes. Yeah. So the serving sizes. Now, we talked a little bit about this before the show, and I mentioned that my wife and I have experimented, and some of the portions that the industry recommends, they're way short of the recommended protein levels and the calorie levels of what it would take to sustain somebody over a long period of time in an emergency situation. Because you're going to stress and physical activity is going to be much higher in an emergency situation than is day to day.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think that's what a lot of people fail to understand is, you know, there are a lot of places to go out and purchase emergency food storage. And, you know, I'll be the first one to tell you that since this pandemic started, you are seeing hundreds of companies pop up over the past several months of now being in the emergency food storage business because they see, you know, people needing that and they try to take advantage of it. And it's causing a lot of issues, to be honest with you, because what they fail to realize is that a lot of people, you know, will say, hey, look, I need to have 3 servings of food per day. And they categorize that in breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so these companies will come out and advertise and say, hey, look, you know, we can give you 3 servings of food per day for 6 months. And, you know, here's this astronomical low price. And, you know, these companies are really doing a disservice to people out there because it's setting up false expectations. And, you know, when you really go and do the math and look at what your dollar is purchasing, you know, you're going to be very, very upset when you actually go to use that product in an actual emergency, because you are not getting what your body needs for survival.
Yeah. Even those backpack meals, you know, some of them are 1.5 servings or 2 servings. No way. I'm eating the whole package.
Right.
It you know, there's not enough. There may be a lot of salt in there and a lot of other things in there, but it's not giving me a sense of satisfaction that I know I have enough to last until the next meal. It's almost like I want to eat 2 of those, you know. I'm not a big guy, but I have a healthy metabolism. So I need more than what these things are prescribing. And so I think that's one of the drawbacks in the industry that I noticed that you have on your products, you have a calorie intake of 2,000 calories. So that's above many in the industry that I've noticed.
Yeah, it is. And that is one of the things that we pride ourselves on. Again, I think it goes back to the amount of time that we have been in this industry and in the space is, you know, like I mentioned before, there are hundreds of companies out there that advertise, hey, look how many servings you can get for this amazing price, or look how much weight of this product it is that you're getting. What these companies fail to realize, and it really tricks the end consumer, is actually the most important thing is how many calories that your body is taking in. And it's not just calories from sugar or from, you know, we like to call them as empty calories. It is calories derived from complex carbohydrates. You need to have a good source of what we call healthy calories. Calories, you know, from food that is actually fulfilling to you, that is actually going to do your body what it needs to do and not just getting those, you know, quote unquote empty calories. We take it a step further also by regulating, you know, and adding and calling out specifically how much protein you're going to be consuming on a daily basis as well. And so you'll notice going through our website at beprepared.com, you know, our long-term emergency food kits, you'll notice that some of them have a little seal that says QSS, which stands for Quality Survival Standards. And that's just a rating standard that'll let the end consumer know that that particular package is going to give you 2,000 calories at a minimum, plus, 30 to 40 grams of protein at a minimum. Again, these are just baseline standards because, like I said, you know, the average person needs at least 2,000 calories per day in order to survive. And, you know, that is one thing that really does separate us out from some of these other guys that just don't draw any attention to the actual caloric intake.
Yeah. I did an interview with the Provident Preppers, and we talked about calorie intake, and Kylene Jones, she said that in her planning, she always plans for 2,500 calories because of her husband and the sons that they have and other relatives. And, you know, she says that if there's anything left over, then that's fine. But at least, sure, you know, that's a baseline planning method that she uses. And, you know, 2,000 calories, that's like I said, it's higher than the average that I've noticed. There may be, you know, some other companies out there that have equal to yours. I haven't noticed any that have anything more than yours. So that's right. Important that people understand you're not counting servings, you're counting calories. And so you need mix up whatever it is that it takes to reach that 2,000 calorie count. Now that's 2,000 calories per day, right?
Per day, yes. That is 2,000 calories per day, as well as, you know, over 40 grams of protein per day.
Yeah.
And again, this is what I try to educate, you know, all of my customers is, everybody will come to me and be like, hey, Joe, I need to get a plan for me and my family. And they'll say, hey, I want to get some fruits. I want to get some vegetables. I want to get some meats. And I always stop them right there and I say, hey, look, that's a great idea. Don't get me wrong. But you need to get your bases covered first and foremost. And what I mean by that is I sit down with the family and I'll say, hey, look, what is your goal? What is the amount of food that you feel that you would be comfortable with? You know, and every family is going to be different, Preston. The beautiful thing about this is there's not a one size fits all.
You're right.
Every family is going to be different. Every body type is going to be different. And you're going to have different requirements, different tastes, different, you know, things that you're more prone to like than other families, which is just fine. But what I say to them is to get your bases covered. So let's say, for instance, if the goal of the family is a 6-month supply of food for, you know, their family, mm-hmm. you know, that's great. I want to make sure that they're going to have enough calories and enough meals and enough protein to get them 2,000 calories per day, 30 to 40 grams of protein per day for 6 months. That's the baseline. That's your basis covered. Once you get that established, then we have other items that you can add to it that's going to make your life a lot more comfortable. Now, a lot of families, when they sit down for a meal, they're going to have their main course dinner, their main course option, which would be like, let's say, for instance, a plate of lasagna. Now, when you sit down to eat normally, mom, bless her heart, is going to have, or dad, bless his heart, are going to have more than just, you know, a spoonful of lasagna sitting on your plate. If you're lucky enough, you're going to have a nice glass of milk. You're going to have maybe a little bit of a salad, you know, and then if you've been really good, maybe you'll have a little dessert afterwards. And all those items combined is what's going to contribute to your daily total caloric intake. And so what we try to do here at Emergency Essentials, we want to make sure that everybody's going to be covered, get their bases covered, you know, with our products. And so once you get your bases covered, then you can go in, like I said, you can add the freeze-dried fruits. You can add the freeze-dried vegetables. You can add the freeze-dried meat. So now if you want to enhance your pasta Alfredo or your lasagna, you can throw some freeze-dried chicken into it while it's getting prepared. And now you're going to have chicken pasta Alfredo.
Yeah.
You know, and all those little things are going to add to what you would sit down to have like a normal family meal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think it's important for customers and for your audience to know that, you know, money is tight and be efficient with it. And if you need to be the most efficient with it, get your bases covered first and foremost.
Yeah. Let me just clarify something for our friends out there who are listening. I didn't have you on to promote your product necessarily, but I did want to have somebody with your knowledge about this subject on the show so that we can clarify some of the questions that people have. There's a lot of new preppers out there that are clueless as to how to get started and what they need to do. And so, you know, like I said, I've been receiving emails from you guys for quite some time, and I've read many of the articles. And matter of fact, there's one right now at the bottom of your homepage. It's under the Emergency Essentials Preparedness Resource Center. There's one about power outages. And there's, you go down there and there's a lot of neat graphics. And one of them is this graphic that shows, it says, where do you stand? And it's a checklist. And it has various levels of maturity in preparedness. Okay, and there's a prepple meter on the right-hand side. And it starts out with a day prepper.
It's a cool little graphic.
Yeah, it's really cool neat. I like this. Matter of fact, I saved it as a PDF, and I printed it out for this show. So probably taping on my workstation here. But it has starting off day prepper, which is a baby, you know, and then you go for a shelf stalker, which is, you know, somebody a little older. And then a rainy day warrior, maybe a teenager, survivor, somebody, you know, young adult. And then disaster master is, you know, they've got everything covered. Uh-huh. They've got 6 months to 1 year of long-term food storage. They've got plenty of water stored. They've got power generation and fuel. They've got grid-independent communications. They've got, what's this other one? Non-hybrid
potassium
seeds.
Potassium, iodide.
Yeah, disaster protection, biohazard.
They have it all.
Yeah. And actually, it looks like I'm a disaster master because we've got this. So, yeah, we've got all this taken care of. So I never knew the level that I was at before. So now I'm glad I do.
And you know what, Preston, too? Again, there's not a right or wrong way. And like I mentioned before, every family is going to be different. Every family is going to have their own level of security in which they need to feel prepared. And there's nothing wrong with being a day prepper, as opposed to nothing wrong with being a disaster right. master. And, you know, the beautiful thing about emergency preparedness is, you know, I look at it as like a diamond. You know, when you look closely at a diamond, there are many, many facets of a diamond, many, many different faces. And emergency food just happens to be one facet of this beautiful diamond, you know, and there are people out there who absolutely love all the cool hardware and the toys that I like to call them, you know, that you can purchase for emergency preparedness, like the solar ovens. The
yeah,
solar
those are
batteries,
all extra nice have.
You know, all the electrical stuff. I mean, those things are so much fun to have, you know, and or first aid kits or get
well,
up
first
and go
aid kits mandatory.
Or,
you got to have first aid
storage.
Kit. There's no two ways about it.
Right.
You have to have that, and it's not just for little boo boos. You got to have stuff for you know, accidental wounds from chopping wood or cooking or whatever. You gotta be able to take care of things. You gotta have training too. So that's very important to have.
Right.
And I guess it is a facet of the diamond of preparedness.
Yeah. I mean, again, and I want to emphasize this, there's not a right or wrong way. And there's a phrase that I say often, and you know, all the people that work with me, they know it well. And you know, it's something that goes along this lines. President says, the more people are prepared, the more that people are prepared, the better off we're all going to be. And you know, it's not about just you and your family, but again, you can extend emergency preparedness to communities, to your neighborhood, to your religious affiliations, you know, your coworkers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different ways that you can things that you can do in order to become better prepared. And again, there's not a right or wrong way to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's where civil defense comes in. That's, you know, we did it in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and then it became a political football and it got shut down. But, you know, the government is the largest prepper in this country because they're prepared. They prepare for emergencies and disasters and things that are conspiracy theories. Well, not really, because they are prepared for those disasters. Believe me, I was at that level, so I know some of the things. It's people just need to understand that preparedness is an individual responsibility, but it's also a collective responsibility.
Right. And you know, while the government, I think, does a tremendous job of providing those different valuable resources from when a natural disaster comes, I still think it is imperative for the actual individual to take the initiative prepare for themselves, because nobody is going to care more about your survival
right.
than yourself. And, you know, we've seen the government and, you know, the things that they can do. However, we also know how long it takes them to get stuff done. You know, you look at some of these natural disasters, you know, for example, like hurricanes or floods, it takes several weeks for, you know, assistance to arrive. And while everybody's grateful for that assistance, it still takes time.
Yes.
And so, again, I think one of the biggest things that you can do, that we can do, is teach people to be self-sufficient, to be independent, and take the initiative upon yourself to get prepared for you and your family. You know, it's like, I'm reminded of whenever you fly on an airplane and they're going through their safety presentation. One thing that always sticks out to me is they always say, put on your own air mask first before you start helping other people. And I think that's a valuable lesson to learn, is you need to get prepared for you and your family first and foremost, because nobody's going to come around to save you. You know, if they do, it's going to take a lot longer, but take the initiative on your own and be self-sufficient.
Because you are your own first responder. Yeah, and that's what FEMA says.
Absolutely. And I think if anything, if we could nail home that point today, Preston, I think it would be that, is to take the initiative to get started and to worry about you and your family first and foremost.
Yeah, we only have a few minutes left, so let's get into water storage real quick, if you can.
Absolutely. And, you know, water storage is always going to be one of those things that, you know, the food is great to have. You know, you can go 7 days without food. You can only go 3 days without water. And so water is going to be very, very critical. And there's a lot of different things that you can do to have a good water supply. You know, you can have, you know, stored water in water barrels, you know, those big 55-gallon drums that you see. You can store water in those. You can have, you know, water filtration systems. And these are like the little, the stainless steel systems that you see that have like the carbon filters. That the nice thing about those, Preston, is those can filter out, you know, pretty much any contaminant out there. So if you live close to a lake, a stream, a river, a pond, you know, go grab some of that water, run it through, you know, a filtration system, and you can have clean, potable water, water that you can consume for drinking, water that can be used for preparing these long-term storage meals, and then again, water for everyday use, for cleaning your utensils, for sanitation, and everything else. Water, water, water is super imperative.
Yes, I agree. Matter of fact, I had a medical incident here recently that I believe was triggered because of dehydration, and I, for 4 days, basically, I wasn't drinking enough liquid. And then I worked real hard in the yard the fourth day, and that night I had a problem. So it's one of those things that we have to drink plenty of fluids. Now I'm drinking, you know, anywhere from 80 plus ounces of water a day, and so it's important. And in a
Isn't it great how amazing you feel by having, you know, a higher water intake?
Yeah.
I mean, just the power of drinking water on a daily basis, I think a lot of people forget actually how good it makes you feel. And especially in times of heightened stress levels, of anxiety, drinking water, honestly, is probably one of the best things that you can do for your body.
Well, I've also lost some weight. I really didn't need to, but I went from 175 to 170. And, you know, I'm 6 foot, and I'm slender. And so that was a significant drop, but it was mainly because of all the water I've been drinking and getting rid of more contaminants that I didn't need, you know, washing away fat and stuff like that, and, you know, a new diet too. But I feel good. So yeah. You're right. Yeah. But one of the things it does, when you drink enough fluid, your organs have what it needs to, or what they need to operate efficiently. And so any quick last word, you want to give your website again and how people can get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely, Preston. You know, the nice thing about our website too is, yes, we do focus on long-term food storage, but You know, there is an amazing section on our website that is just dedicated to resources for finding out if you're just beginning, if you're an advanced prepper. We have checklists. We have what to do in different emergency situations like power outage, floods, hurricanes, you know, freezing cold temperatures. We have a variety of different resources that you can go, you can read, you can learn, and, you know, you can utilize our checklist to kind of see where you stack up. So visit our website, and that website is beprepared.com. We have a specific section up on our website titled Resources that you can go take a look at. We have section there for bulk food, for survival kits, for water, for gear. You know, we want to really be your one-stop shop for emergency preparedness, whether it's for purchasing products or just getting more knowledge. And, you know, I invite all of your listeners to the Civil Defense Radio to check out our website. Again, that website is beprepared.com.
Great. Thank you. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based, grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And our YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And I have a new channel now at Parler. So just look us up there at Civil Defense Radio. And again, I would like to thank Joe Reek, our guest today. And I'd like to thank you, our friends out there who are listening to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. And you international followers, we really appreciate you as well. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.